welcome to a podcast about something where each week we dive deep into whatever it is we find interesting. I'm your host, Calvin, and we're not actually going to be diving that deep into anything this week. We are both on vacation, myself and Nick, and so instead of your regular scheduled episode throughout this week, we are putting out all of our Patreon bonus content into, we're compiling them into single episodes. We'll have a couple random reviews episodes and a couple pilot projections episodes throughout the week. Every day there should be a new episode, so you can go back and listen to some of the things we did on Patreon now that the Patreon is closed. So stay tuned, take a listen. They're just going to run back to back to back, and then there will be another one tomorrow with different episodes that we did. So take a listen. If you like what you hear, there will be more in a day or so. Stay classy. Welcome to a podcast about something's Patreon exclusive. We watch the pilot episode of a TV show and make some predictions. I said, baby, I don't hate you, but I hate to see you go. Today on Pilot Projections, we'll be diving into the 1990s cartoon show Gargoyles, The Awakening, Part 1. Part one of five. Like, holy shit, how do you have a first episode that's five fucking parts? That's too much, Gargoyles.
I think that is a little too much.
I think, and I could be wrong on this, listeners, I know you're out there, correct me if I am wrong. I really feel like I remember a Gargoyles movie existing first, and maybe that's why it's five part. Like, this was all a movie, and then it got split up once they, like, syndicated it. But I could be completely wrong also. Yeah, but I really feel like I remember a movie before the show.
It's been so long since I had any interaction with Gargoyle series, so I was really pumped to
that. I remember there was a Burger King this toy.
I remember, that sounds about right, like a McDonald's toy or something.
I think it was Burger King, because we went to Burger King a lot. Not like, we went to Burger King more than McDonald's, so like that's I think I remember that it was Burger King. But that's in the 90s. That's what Disney really liked to do, is they'd make a movie and then all of a sudden there'd be a shitty spin-off series about it. Like, there was Aladdin series, there was a Little Mermaid series, there was there was Ducks fighting hockey playing actual ducks series.
There was a companion series for everything,
basically everything. There's Chip and Dale series, you know, everything, any property they had, they were putting out series in the 90s, and a lot of them were good. A lot of them were bad, too.
It was a fair mix of good and bad. Mostly mediocre. It was middle-of-the-pack shit, that's for sure. That's why I made it straight to TV.
That's true.
Or, you know, instead of syndication movies.
The first thing I noticed is this show has some dope cover art.
Dude, it, and the score? Let me throw that out there.
Yeah, so I've got problems here with this show. Now, I remember this show. I didn't remember it. Like, I remember not liking it as a kid. Like, every time I would come across it, I was like, this is kind of fucking boring. And so I was like, I was really prepared to go into this as an adult and change my mind. I'm not sure that that happened with this episode. Now, that could just be because we watched one part of five and I didn't get the full story, but I was also still pretty bored.
I was really confused.
You start in the 90s with this detective. And then she discovers these claw marks on a stone, and then all of a sudden we're back in Scotland for the rest of the episode in 994
AD. What I found was weird, though, is there's like a storm going on, or like, what is that?
So I read in the synopsis that there is a battle atop a New York tower with a storm going on around the battle. But that was all. That's all we got. And then we flash back to the Scotland, so it doesn't matter.
Yeah, it's a siege in Scotland against, you know, two warring tribes or some shit. They're looking for refugees, apparently. And the under-sieged castle has gargoyles, banana land, and there we go. We're into gargoyle territory here.
Exactly. There's some people trying to break into a castle that is protected by stone gargoyles, and they're kind of talking about how there's this mythology around these gargoyles that they come to life at night. So it's really important that they get in there during the day before the gargoyles can come to life and basically murder everyone because they're fucking gargoyles. So they're really trying to rush, and the leader of this rival clan is like, ah, no, I don't give a shit about that. Let's go. And then the gargoyles come to life and pretty much just like, are like, nah, you guys suck.
Yeah, they start wrecking everybody in very, you know, G-rated style, like picking them up and throwing them somewhere.
Throwing them where you can't see. It's like in Beauty and the Beast when the Gaston and the Beast are having their final fight, and instead of Beast, like, just fucking mauling Gaston, Gaston just kind of trips and falls off the tower that they're on, and then, like, in a later made-for-TV movie, it turns out he's still alive. He's okay after that big fall into the water. That was all 90s animation. It was like, we're going to make it look like this guy's dying, but we're not actually going to show him.
We're going to leave so much ambiguity into it.
Unless you're the main character's parents, then fuck you, you're dead.
Yeah, you dead, son. Still, they all had problems with their parents.
Mufasa, man. Gets me every time. So I will say, as boring as I feel like the show was when I was a kid and still felt watching this one episode, and I'll probably try a couple more episodes to see if I can get into it, the animation is great.
It really
is. Classic 90s animation. You feel like you're back in the 90s when you're watching it. It's very crisp, and it's very it's colorful while also being close to grayscale just because of the setting that it's in.
Yeah, it's like varying shades of gray and brown.
Yeah, it's very vibrant and bold, which is nice.
Well, it reminded me of X-Men. I mean, that same kind of, not necessarily...
X-Men, Batman, Spider-Man tried to throw in a lot of computer animated generated stuff. So you go a little different direction there, but like it really, you got into that feel of all those shows.
Yeah, which grabbed my attention pretty much right off the bat. Like the opening title screen, the score going in, and I mean, it's set up odd. I mean, it was very confusing, but... the animation style, I'll always love watching anything with that style.
Yeah, I agree with you. Let's just try and roll through this plot that was confusing, because I agree there. We learn that the Vikings are trying to destroy the tower with the gargoyles. Somebody betrays... there's a lot of people within the community that the gargoyles protect that think they're monsters or don't trust them. You know, all that general stuff you get, right? They're more afraid of them than they think they're helpful with. So somebody betrays the I guess they're the protagonists, but this village, the leaders of this village, they betray them, go to the Vikings, tell them how to get in and how to stop the gargoyles before it turns night. But at the same time, the gargoyles are deciding they're going to strike the Vikings before they can return during the day. So they want to go out at night, same night that the Vikings attack. They want to go out, chase them down, and basically finish them off before they can come back the next day, and the gargoyles aren't there to protect them.
So sound planning. Definitely sound planning. I mean, it makes sense.
So the leader, Goliath, is his name. None of the other gargoyles have names, just Goliath.
Which, let me say this, I thought was dumb as fuck.
I feel like they probably get names later in the show, right? Because, like, how are you going to have – they went, like, 70 episodes, something like that. You can't have a 70-episode show and not give 5 of the 6 main characters names.
I mean, yeah, that wouldn't fly, but I think it kind of harkens back to an older school style of TV making. Like, you had to wait to get to stuff instead of everything thrown at you that first episode. Mm-hmm. Because
is nice, too. I'll give
it's
that.
It's definitely nice, but if this aired today as, like, one episode... I think a lot of people would be like, I don't think I'm going to tune in for episode 2, because I have no idea what the fuck, you know, they don't even have names yet.
This episode didn't leave me wanting to go into episode 2, and episode 2 is a continuation. It's not even like, okay, episode 1 happened, it's over, now there's something new going on in episode 2. Episode 2 would have been a direct continuation of episode 1, and I'm just like, yeah, I don't really care, sorry.
Yeah, even if I knew I was supposed to watch it, like, as a movie or something of that nature, I probably would have stopped it right where that first episode ended. So I guess that's, you know, decent in a way, but it just didn't really give me all that skis.
Exactly. So the Goliath, the leader, and the old dude gargoyle, we don't have names. There's 6 total gargoyles. One's a woman, and then there's also a dog. The rest are all male.
I was just like, a dog gargoyle. A dog oil.
A dog oil. Yeah, we'll call him dog oil. So Glath and old dude gargoyle, they take off to try and go attack the Vikings. Meanwhile, other dude is betraying his village, I guess they're the Scots, and telling the Vikings how to get in while their guard is down because Glath's out, basically. So the Vikings come in, they somehow sneak into the tower during the day while Goliath and old dude are out, and they destroy all of the gargoyle statues. Because if you destroy the stone statues during the day, the gargoyles can't come to life at night, apparently. So the legend goes.
That's so sad.
And then they sack the castle.
Yeah, they burn that bitch down. And yeah. Goliath and old dude come back when the sun goes back down, and uh-oh, it's basically gone. And he finds a pile of rubble, but you don't, I'm guessing it was his girl, but I don't know how he could tell.
Yeah, like, is it a destroyed castle? Maybe he just assumed that it was all of the gargoyles or something. I had kind of tuned out by then.
Yeah, he, you know, screams at the sky in Keith David's signature voice. That was a very remarkable Arnold.
Keith David's a great voice actor.
Yeah, he, dude.
Frank Welker in there, too. They've got a good voice cast in this. That's another thing that they do good.
Surprisingly good voice cast.
It's like all of the technical stuff in this show are good. It's just too boring for me. And I remember that as a kid, that it was too boring for me.
I mean, it's just, there's really nothing that stands out about it. You know what I mean? It doesn't have those cool action scenes that you loved as a kid.
No, even the, like, you know, even the fight that happened, there were a lot of quote-unquote cuts during the fight of, like, Goliath would swoop down on somebody like he's attacking, but then it would just kind of flash away and you just assume that. Or, like, you'd see shadows, like, boxing on a wall instead of actually, like, seeing the fight. So it was a lot of that kind of stuff where they're cutting away from the action instead of showing you the action, which, again, I get it's a kid's show, so they're trying not to be overly, like, there's a reason that the Ninja Turtles weren't allowed to use their weapons in the Ninja Turtles TV show. But at the same time, it kind of loses, like, the characters aren't interesting enough to keep me coming back. Like, the Ninja Turtles, even though you didn't necessarily see them fighting all the time, like, the characters seemed interesting. Like, they were funny, they had good rapport, and
they were endearing.
You cared about the problems they were solving. I didn't care about this village in Scotland and the Vikings attacking them for whatever reason and who knows why.
Well, plus, I mean, two things. It was, there's less of them, so it's, you know, there's like 8 total gargoyles.
They'll have names. That helps.
Yeah, that also helps. And, I mean, their story's pretty cut and dry.
Really easy from the beginning. Relate to somebody if you know their name.
Oh, yeah. That is very true. I completely missed that.
Yeah, I just, there's, I don't know, maybe too much going on, maybe not enough going on. It just can't find a happy balance with anything, at least in this first episode. I wonder if that eases up once you get into the show a little bit, because then they're just in New York City and they're just protecting New York City. So, like, maybe that, like, if they're not trying to go back on all that history and explain where they came from and what they're doing, maybe it's better. Like, I would give some episodes in, like, a mid-season type thing a try to see if they're more interesting. But to me, this 5-part thing was not interesting.
No.
I'm definitely not going to watch 5 parts of it.
No, probably not. And if anything, I'd probably Google, like, supercuts, like, what are mandatory episodes of Gargoyles to watch. Because, you know, there's a list of that out everywhere.
Oh, I'm sure. Especially after Disney Plus launched now.
Oh, yeah.
That everybody's going to be like, here are the shows you need to watch and which episodes of each show you need to watch.
I will say, I would probably watch the 2nd part on a day where my daughter is really pissed off in the middle of the evening.
Let her and fall asleep to it.
Yeah, or I want to sleep, and it's just like, I literally cannot watch anything else. Because that happens.
It's probably a good sleep cartoon. I would guarantee that, if nothing else.
It worked well for, it made me sleepy.
Like, you can't sleep to Goof Troop, because Goofy's always getting into some shit, and you got to see what happens. But Gargoyles, you could probably doze off during that.
It's like, whoa, he's swooping down again, and picking some guy off, picking him up and taking him somewhere.
And then you'll wake up 3 episodes later, and it'll be literally the same scene.
Yeah, and Goliath's like, listen to me, friends. I can't do his voice, but...
Except maybe they'll have names by then. I don't know.
Watch, they're just going to be ridiculous. Goliath and Tiny and Jim Bob.
Old guy.
Oglethorpe.
Old Goyle. Dog Goyle. Girl Goyle.
Jabrikasha Ferguson.
Jabrikasha Ferguson. That's a good one. It's a good one.
Barkevious Mingo.
We're just going to name him after Browns defensive players.
Yep.
I'm cool with that.
Vontaze Burfict is going to go there sometime.
Just watch. I mean, Myles Garrett, he's all in the news. Let's throw him in there. Why not?
Poor guy. Not even. That dude's an idiot. He shouldn't have taken a hot take. Should not have taken his helmet off and hit him over the head with it. Dumb.
I'm really mad that he hit him with the head, and I said this on Twitter. I'm really mad that he hit him with the helmet in the head because it was such a boss move to just pull him up one-handed by the face mask. Like, he just grabbed him with one hand and pulled him straight off the ground by the face mask. And, like, if it had just ended there, everybody would be like, Myles Garrett's a baller. Like, he still would have suspended a game instead of the rest of the season, but, like, everybody would have been like, yeah, don't fuck with Myles Garrett. Did you see how he showed up Mason Rudolph here?
He looked like a little toy. Like, yeah. And he's not a little dude. He's like 6'4", or 6'3", and, you know, 240. Myles Garrett was like, come here, little boy. Hey, little boy, get your ass up here. And, you know, that was that. It's kind of how Goliath was whenever he gets his revenge.
Exactly. Myles Garrett's new nickname is Goliath the Gargoyle.
Dude, that fits so well. That fits perfectly.
So we got some lingering questions for the rest of the season. First and foremost, will the rest of the Gargoyles get names?
Yes.
I mean,
that is
obviously
absolutely my biggest question. The second question for me is, what the fuck is their purpose? Like, I get Goliath is first in command and the female is second in command, but there's a guy that just eats.
She's second in command, but she's definitely boning Goliath, so.
No, he's specifically Goliath. Stoning. That was a
great one.
That's pretty good. High five. High five. Nice. But I think he says like 3 or 4 times, he's like, you are my second in command. You are my chosen.
Oh,
boo. You are the
I
one
thought
chick
that was just
and
he was
I called
her,
you.
But
I
could be wrong.
Prefer that way better. And if we could get that dude to say that, let's go stone. That'd be so awesome.
All right, everybody. You keep watch over the city. We're going to go in the back room and stone for a little while.
We're going to the rooftop under the stars.
So, yeah, what is their purpose? Why is it just we're going to protect wherever we are? Is, like, do they single out any bad guys for any reason? How do they get to New York City in the first place, right? That's important.
It's a long way. And how the fuck do they get back together?
How do they get together? How do they reawaken? Like, they're destroyed at this point. How do they... Yeah, that's a good question. And then... What's this role? What is the role this detective's gonna play? This lady detective who found the claw marks. Like, obviously she's going to be the main human character because she's the only one with really any screen time besides the Vikings and Scots, and they're clearly like they're not gonna move forward 1,000 years. So is she gonna help them? Is she gonna be constantly hunting them? What's going on here with her? That's gonna be interesting.
I'm guessing it's an April O'Neil style.
That's what I'm thinking. Yeah, like
I'm cool with.
Yeah, Commissioner Gordon, April O'Neil type thing, where you're actually helping them rather than actively hunting. It's not J. Jonah Jameson.
You have a facade of hunting, but you're helping.
Right, exactly. I don't really have anything else to say about this show.
I think I'll watch one more episode, because I want to know what the fuck Goliath does the whole time. Like, what is he doing? Is he just hanging out
for the next
1,000 years?
Yeah, that's a good question.
It would be very boring. So maybe they'll answer that in episode 2. I think I will tune in for it when I'm severely ill or my daughter can't sleep.
Definitely a good sick show. Yeah, I'll probably check out more of it at some point. I'm not, like, there's a lot more on my Disney Plus queue that I'm going to get to before this, though.
Oh, absolutely.
All right.
The Mandalorian.
Check. Yeah. Next month, Mandalorian here on Pilot Projections during Star Wars month. So check that out and come back next month for that. If you have different thoughts on Gargoyles, why it's actually an interest, because everybody I see is like super excited for it and says they really liked it, and I'm just like, no, it's fucking boring. So if you've got a differing opinion, hit us on Twitter at APA something at @alone_podcast. But thanks for being a patron and thanks for stopping by.
Bible says man without vision shall surely die.
Welcome to a podcast about some things, Patreon exclusive. We watch the pilot episode of a TV show and make some predictions. Good evening, and welcome to Pilot Projections, The Mandalorian, Chapter 1. Dun, dun, dun. Wait, what's the Mandalorian theme song? How's that go? I don't know, it's a badass song, though. I like the Mandalorian theme. Anyway, we're talking Mandalorian Chapter 1. We are going to try... I've seen through Episode 7. Nick has seen through Episode 6. Nick is here. I'm Calvin. How you doing, everyone?
What's up?
We're going to try really hard not to spoil it for you. Anything else that happens, in case you're listening to this before going into the full show. We will spoil things that happen in Episode 1, but try not to spoil anything that happens beyond that.
And I mean, if you're listening to this, I imagine you're probably all caught up if you've seen the first episode of The Mandalorian, because it's phenomenal.
And if you're not, and you really want to know what The Mandalorian's like, you've been on the internet in the past, 6 weeks, and you know Baby Yoda exists. So that would be the only spoiler, really, from Episode 1 that we could give you, is that Baby Yoda is a thing. And I'm sure if you've been on the internet, you know that already.
So fucking cute.
Yeah, he is. So we open up on this ice planet, and I love a good ice planet in Star Wars. They're all great. Hoth, Ilum, whatever this planet is. I'm always down for an ice planet.
Fuck ice planets. That's gotta suck.
Well, yeah, it would suck to live there, but they look awesome in Star Wars.
They do. They do a good job. The practical effects are always awesome. I love the cold weather outfits everybody has.
Oh, yeah. I've said it many times throughout Star Wars week. Or Star Wars month, dope jackets in the Star Wars universe. Always dope jackets.
For real. You know those are on sale at Hot Topic for like $199.99.
Damn. It's out of my price range for dope jackets in Florida.
Yeah.
I gotta buy like the t-shirt version of dope jackets. Where it's just a t-shirt with like printed like the tuxedo t-shirt, but dope Star Wars jackets.
And it says dope Star Wars jacket really small over the left breast.
it's like a jersey nameplate on the back. Just says dope Star Wars jacket. So we get an early showcase of the Mando's ability. He's a bounty hunter, obviously, like Boba Fett before him. And he is picking up a bounty in a bar. And, you know, he takes this dude right in. He can bring him in warm or cold.
Yeah. I can bring you in warm or cold. Okay, let me just say, when he walks in, all Western vibes. This gives me Unforgiven, if you've ever seen that movie. It's a Western with Clint Eastwood and Morgan Freeman from like 96, I think. And he walks into this bar at the end and murders everyone in the fucking bar. That's what I felt when I watched Mando walk into this bar in this first episode.
And it pretty much proceeds that same way. I don't know if he kills them, but he hurts some people pretty bad real quick.
Yeah, he disables.
Get to see all his cool weapons, except the fire blaster. We see that later. We see these transponders and bounty pucks, which this is kind of the first we've ever seen of these as far as tracking bounties. That was kind of a cool thing. Really don't know how these work yet, even through 7 episodes. Still not quite sure how they work.
Yeah, do they tag people? Or?
Yeah, how does the tracking fob know where a person is if they've never had that person in custody?
Yeah, that's something I am confused. I'm sure there'll be like an off the cuff kind of.
I hope so. Yeah, I hope we get an explanation for it.
Yeah.
So he gets his bounty. He's on his way back to his ship. They call him a speeder, dope yellow speeder, land speeder, but no droids. He wants nothing to do with droids. Has a very bad history with droids. He does not want anything. He discriminates against them. That's the word I was looking for.
He's a droidist.
He is a droidist. But I love the yellow speeder. It's awesome.
That it looks like an upgraded version of Luke's.
Yeah, it looks like the T-16 pretty much. Then they call in kind of a shittier one that has a human, it is a human because it's Brian Posehn, pilot, and he takes him out to the Razor Crest, which another great ship. They think it's a bucket of bolts again, but just like the Millennium Falcon, Razor Crest is a great ship. It'll get the job done. But they're worried the whole time out there of the Ravenax in the lake.
Before we move on, I gotta say, I wasn't really feeling his ship.
No, you don't like it?
I'm not really a big fan of the aesthetic. I don't really like the silver, like the bright silver, or the reflective silver, I think is... I think it was like darker cobalt.
Well, it looks almost like it's Beskar, which I noticed this time. And I don't think it is, but it might be.
There's no fucking way.
And we'll get further
way
into Beskar. Yeah, with how much it took to... with what we see of that later in the season. And I was just saying it had that same look, but it is kind of shinier and it looks flimsier than like his armor in later episodes.
I'm saying if it was like that darker cobalt color like Beskar.
Mm-hmm.
But anyways,
I don't know. I like it. I like the inside of it. It's got a bathroom. This is the first time we've ever seen a bathroom used in Star Wars or attempted to be used. He didn't actually use the vac tube, but he said he was going to. It's a fun fact for you there.
I'm gonna take a big shit. That's exactly what he said, folks. Word for word.
Yeah, basically. And then they get attacked by the Ravenak as they board the Razor Crest. And this is like a new animal. I've never seen it before. It's a walrus / snake / whale / hippo / probably 15 other things coming up out of the frozen sea.
It's a chimera of some sort. Chimera.
It's a scary fucking beast.
Yeah. I did latches not like on, the look of it.
No. Latches on to the Razor Crest as they're trying to fly away. Mando's got to use his kind of stun rifle to get him off, which, another fun fact here, I've got a lot of these. That rifle comes from the Star Wars Holiday Special. It was used, a similar rifle, not the, maybe the exact one, maybe not, was used by Boba Fett in the animated part of the Star Wars Holiday Special.
No shit. I've been curious because I think we talked about, we mentioned that weapon in an episode previously. So yeah, it's kind of cool to know somewhat of the origins.
Yeah, Boba Fett wields one in that special, which nobody's ever seen. Don't watch it.
It looked terrible. I've seen little clips. It looks fucking terrible.
He's so like I said, he's got a toilet on board. They've got the carbon freezer right on board. So, you know, when he brings in all these bounties, he just bam, freezes them right there to bring them in. That's pretty cool. I would like that on my car.
I mean, that'd be really convenient.
You got to go on a long trip with somebody who's super annoying. Throw them in there.
They keep touching your fucking stereo. It's like, whoa, boy.
Yeah, it's like, hey, go check out something in the trunk. I left my bag in there. Go grab that.
Yeah.
All right, you're frozen.
Hey, dude, reach way back there. Get me a sandwich from the cooler.
Now I can listen to the Tennis Podcast in peace.
Shout out Tennis Podcast.
What up? And so, you know, we get a little bit of Mandalorian, not Mando, but the Mandalorian culture in general, their background. This guy says that they never take off their helmets, or he asks if that's true. And I guess this is a new thing since the fall of the since Imperial Reign, because in Star Wars Rebels, there's a Mandalorian on the Rebel crew that it follows. Her name is Sabine, and she takes off her helmet literally all the time in front of whomever she wants. So this don't remove your helmet thing is new to this show. We don't know when that came up. At some point, there was a great purge of Mandalore. Sometime between the Clone Wars and present day for this show, which is about 9 BBY after the Battle of Yavin. Or sorry, ABY. 9 ABY after the Battle of Yavin. So it's sometime in there. The Empire's fallen. There aren't many Mandalorians left. The ones that are left won't remove their helmets. I don't know why.
Because this, know why is, this the is a
new thing. It is that this is the way. That's true. So he turns in all his bounties that he's collected to our boy, Greef Karga, played by the tremendous Carl Weathers.
Dude, he nails this shit so well. I loved it.
Yeah. I love Carl Weathers. He comes back in a couple later episodes, and there are just some lines. There's one line in episode 7. I won't even say what it is because I don't remember it exactly. But, like, it's a really stupid line. But because Carl Weathers said it, it had me cracking up.
I mean,
and it was just like, if anybody else would have said it, I would have been like, that's stupid and cheesy. But because Carl Weathers said it, I was like, that's awesome.
Oh, dude, Carl Weathers is the business. And fun fact about Carl Weathers, I guess he is a cheapskate in real life. Like, he is super,
according to
super
Arrested frugal. Development, that checks out.
Yeah, and I mean, so...
That's why, like, we're having this dinner at Burger King. Home of the Whopper.
And I mean, his attitude kind of comes across that way in this. It's... I enjoy it. It's great.
He's out there
Carl
for the
Weathers.
Money for sure.
Well, and I mean, at the same time, Mando's turning in these bounties that he's collected all the good bounties, so he's kind of pushing out other bounty hunters. And
right, and these guys are all part of a bounty hunters guild, basically a union of bounty hunters. They do it legally, and they all work together. Like, there are rules to the guild. I don't have them off the top of my head. You can Google them. But, like, basically, if they ask for help, you have to help them out. If somebody's there first, they basically have dibs on the bounty. You're not allowed to attack other guild members, things like that.
Which is a weird thing, in my opinion, for Star Wars. Like, I didn't realize the bounty hunters had guilds to work with.
So
it's cool,
up,
but it's weird for me.
Binge Mode does a great episode, because they've been going through each episode of Mandalorian, as well as a bunch of other Star Wars stuff. They had a great episode on the first episode of The Mandalorian, where they describe what the guild does, and they go into all these rules and stuff. And from what they said is the guild rose up during the age of the Empire because the Empire could not police the entire galaxy that they had. They couldn't hit all these outer rim planets and all of that based on what they had. So they basically let the bounty hunters cooperate with them, kind of, if they were quote unquote unionized.
It's pretty cool, actually.
But listen to Binge Mode Star Wars for more information on that. They do a much better job of going into it than I can here.
Sounds good. I will do so.
And then the Mando won't take Imperial credits, which, given what happens like 10 minutes later in this episode, that's kind of weird. He's like, nah, no Imperial credits, but I'll work for this guy. Yeah, he's okay.
He's got what I want. He has what I want, though.
Something I noticed when Greef Karga, because he's asking for more bounties, basically, and Greef Karga starts running through some things. He says there's a wanted smuggler, and I'm wondering if that's Han Solo.
I'm
wondering if there's
so.
Still a bounty out there. I think it's just like this really super quick, easy Easter egg thrown in there, because we know, as of The Force Awakens, Han Solo's back out on his own. We don't exactly know when that happened, when, you know, he kind of broke from Leia and went back out on his own as a smuggler at some point after the fall of the Empire and The Force Awakens. Somewhere in there, he did, though. So I'm wondering if that's him.
I think so. I think so.
I'm going to just think it is.
It sounds cool to me. And I like that it's just a small nod instead of this, like, blatant
product
advertisement.
Well, we have Han Solo out there. Do you know who he is?
Wink, wink.
Yeah, yeah. Han Solo. Yeah, we know him.
Han Solo?
Yeah, I've heard of him. No, it's not that, which is nice. It's nice that it's simple.
Yeah.
Mando doesn't like any of those jobs. I don't pay enough, but there's one job. There's always one job, right? Pays top dollar.
Gotta do it.
But it's a face-to-face meet, no tracking fob. He's gotta go meet this guy, and as we alluded to, this guy's got some Imperial background. He's got stormtroopers guarding him. He's got, Imperial logos all over his little apartment here. We just need to know, who is this guy? Who does he work for? We don't know any of that. We just know he's got Imperial ties.
Played
after
by
the fall
great
of the Empire.
Werner Herzog. Werner Herzog.
Apparently hates Star Wars. Like, he thinks it's stupid.
He fucking wrecked it this time.
He's on record with Star Wars is stupid and pointless, so it's funny to see him in there throwing lines out.
Was it Alec Guinness that played Obi-Wan?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he hated it too. So
yeah. A lot of people hate Star Wars, apparently. Like, literally 90% of the actual Star Wars fandom hates Star Wars. So, you know, what do I know?
Did it just make them pull their hair out?
Yeah. If you hate everything about it, why are you a fan? Like, just move on to something else. Go
people
collect Pokemon cards.
Yep.
We learn from the client that Mando is the best in the parsec at getting people, which is great. And then we also meet the doctor, Dr. Pershing. What's his plan? What's he got going on? He wants the asset alive. But, you know, Werner Herzog, he don't really care if he comes in alive or not. So they've got some clashing tendencies there.
Alive or dead. He's got that great evil villain accent. Fantastic.
And then he gets paid in Beskar, which at this point we don't really know what Beskar is or why it's so valuable. We get a little bit more information. He goes to see this armorer and the bounty's been out for 50 years. Those are the only things we know about it. And he knows its last known location.
So wait, that bounty's been valid for 50 years?
Yeah, or like the
bounty is 50
years
old.
Either the bounty has been valid for 50 years or the being has been alive for 50 years. I don't know how the trackers work, but he could give him like the last. So the way they said it on my rewatch was they can give him the last four of the ID, whatever the ID is. I don't know if it's like a social security number or a tracking ID. I don't know. But he says we can give you the last four digits of whatever the ID is. And Mando says, so you can just give me the year. With the year that it came, or the age, or something like that. And he gives him the number, and he says, that's 50 years old. So the asset is definitely 50 years old. We don't know if the bounty's been out that whole time or not.
Okay. I thought I had missed something. I was like, hold up.
Yeah, so it's been out there for 50 years. Something has been. So then he's walking to the Mandalorian armor. We see a lot going on in the streets, and one of these little like the hairy rat things, Jabba had one in his palace. One of them's cooking on a spit with another one looking on, and I just thought that was kind of mean to make the other rat look on as he cooked his best friend.
Yeah,
maybe his wife.
Fucked up.
I don't know.
Or his mom. You know, that was fucked up, man.
You don't bring all of the cows in the slaughterhouse when you want to slaughter one. You just bring the one. The others get to keep grazing out on the lawn. I don't really know how that works.
I'm pretty sure they're all
farmers.
Big
get
line.
At us on Twitter.
Please don't. I don't want to hear about that shit. Actually.
No, I don't want to know. We're gonna get a lot of like slaughterhouse videos now.
Fuck no, man.
Not happy. Yeah, I wouldn't be happy with that.
I will travel by vehicle to whoop your ass. I don't want to see that shit.
So he meets up with this armorer who melts down the Beskar, which is a super rare metal. The ore is found on Mandalore, which doesn't exist anymore. It was wiped out in the Great Purge. And all of their Beskar was taken. So to get it back in the Mandalorian's hands is a very important thing. They want this metal back. They use it to make their armor.
It's like a holy relic, almost.
Yeah, and we talked about it a little in our lightsaber episode, because one of the materials that can deflect lightsaber blades and blasters. So it's not only holy, it's super fucking strong. His helmet is already made of Beskar, and this armor makes him a pauldron, which is like a shoulder pad. Now, did you see, after the first episode, any of the occult quote-unquote outrage over there being no female speaking parts in this first episode?
I thought the armorer was female.
The armorer is 100% female. That's why it was so funny that there was a faux outrage over no... Because there was no female's face anywhere. I mean, in the background there were, but no, like, front and center female faces.
She had boobs.
Dude,
she had boobs.
The tweet that I saw online, I don't remember who this was now, was like, I can't believe it. Everybody's going wild over how great the Mandalorian is, but for the entire first episode, there was not a single female speaking part, and all the replies were like, there was like a 10-minute scene with an armorer who was a pretty important part who was 100% female. So it was just funny how that backfired. Like, somebody was trying to get mad and outraged at something that didn't exist.
Fucking bullshit.
Yes.
That armor is dope too. Like, her armor is fucking cool. I really love that. The helmet is fantastic.
Yeah, a lot of great Mandalorian armor throughout the throughout several episodes here. He actually gives all of the Beskar and all of his money that he earned from the previous bounties to the armor, kind of a spoiler for a future episode, that there's this Mandalorian collective where they all kind of hang out together and stay hidden from the remnants of the Empire. So everything there goes towards them and to fund future foundlings, which are just kids that they find and teach the way of the Mandalore. So he was at one point a foundling, and throughout the series we get these flashbacks to when his family came under attack. We still don't know what went on there, how he went from being under attack to becoming a full-on Mandalorian warrior. Go ahead.
Nothing. I thought it was really cool to sprinkle that in.
Yes.
You know, it's good. They really do well with pacing in this first episode in regards to, like, introducing stuff to help fill in the background enough to keep you interested, but not...
Well, and it's only 43 minutes, too, which is... Like, I was surprised when it was over as quickly as it was with how much they packed into it.
Yeah, oh, yeah. And I honestly thought it was supposed to be an hour long, and when I saw 43 minutes, I was kind of disappointed.
I actually like the shorter episodes. There's not, like you said, there's not too much just fluff in there.
Yeah, there's zero fluff in the show.
You know, you get what you came for, and it's really nice that the episodes kind of move throughout. Because if you think forward to the Tatooine episode, which we won't give anything away about it, but at some point he goes to Tatooine, if that was stretched out in over an hour, it would be so boring. But because it's only like 36 minutes, it's really great.
Yeah, it's perfect.
And I really like the flashbacks. I think it's interesting that we get to see where he came from. You know, is he actually a native of Mandalore, or is he just someone they found on a different planet and taught the way of the Mandalorians? Is he, you know, what brought him from being the scared child to actually being one of the most, the best bounty hunter in the Parsec, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm interested. It's kind of like the first couple seasons of Arrow, where they'd keep going back to Oliver Queen's life on the island. Those were always more compelling scenes than whatever the hell was going on in the present time.
Yeah, they were. The first season of Arrow was great, and I hope this show doesn't fall off quite so hard.
No, I really hope not. And these flashbacks, they're not quite as deep as the ones in Arrow. These are, like, really quick. We see his village being attacked, and he hides, and that's over. That's it.
Yeah, it's like 5 seconds instead of 4 minutes, which is a big deal. I mean, that's a big difference.
Exactly. Mando takes off for a new planet. We get three new planets in the one... you know, one 43-minute episode, which is pretty cool to see that many different locales. He takes off to find whatever the asset is. He immediately meets Nick Nolte's character who helps him, who's going to help him along the way finding the asset. Nick Nolte's great in this role. I don't remember his name, but it's not that important. And I don't even think it's mentioned in this first episode. It's mentioned later. He puts Mando in his place while also building his confidence. You know, Mando is uneasy about doing some things or doing things in a certain way, and Nick Nolte's character is just like, nah, this is the way it's got to be. I have spoken.
Yeah. Do this. I have spoken.
We learn that many other bounty hunters have tried coming for this asset and failed and died, and it's basically turned this area into this area where natives would seek peace and just try and get away from it all. It's basically, you know, the Alaskan mountains out there. It doesn't look like that, but, you know, they're just trying to get away from all the hubbub of the war and, you know, rest easy. And this asset being there has brought all this strife in between who's protecting it and bounty hunters seeking it.
And they're pissed.
Yeah, he thinks the Mandalorian has the skills to finally get this asset, so he's willing to help him. He shames him into riding a blurg, which is a big, like, scaly frog, like, I don't know, frog dinosaur thing.
It's weird looking. I don't like it.
It's kind of like a dewback, but it has two legs, so it's not quite a dewback.
It's almost like a snub-nosed T-Rex with no neck.
That's a good way to put it.
Like, no torso. Like, it's just, like, legs and then a head.
Yeah, and they're very intense. The females, you know, eat the males during mating. It's kind of like praying mantis in that way. And riding a blurg is the only way to get to where the asset actually is. So he's got to learn how to do it, and he's just like, he doesn't want to learn. He's just like, give me a speeder bike, something. He's like, nah, you can do it.
I've spoken, bitch. Yeah. If he would have dropped a bitch, I would have died. They should have got Aaron Paul to voice that dude.
I had another moment in this episode where, like, Star Wars needs to be able to curse a little bit, because there's another section where it would fit perfectly. I'll get to that. But same thing there. Like, he could have just said, stop being a bitch. Get on that weird T-Rex and fucking ride it, dude. You know what you're doing.
This chicken nugget T-Rex here.
Yeah, so Nick... chicken nugget T-Rex. That's a good one. That's what it is. A chicken nugget T-Rex. I like that. So he just wants peace for this region. The bounty hunters are only bringing destruction. He wants to put an end to it. So Mando goes down. He's scoping out the area. IG-11 pops up. Super dope droid, IG-11. He's a bounty hunter droid, played by Taika Waititi. Great droid.
He's awesome. I'm
here for IG-11.
Great. Ride or die.
He comes out blasting like he's fucking Frank Reynolds out there. So shooting down everybody. Pisses off Mando. Blasting. Yeah. So I want to know who are these people that are quote unquote people that are protecting the asset? Like, there's 50 fucking things there trying to protect him that IG-11 and Mando have to go through.
Yeah. Are they paid? Like, what's up?
Yeah. And by who? Who paid them? Why can't the client and his boss pay these people just to bring them to them? What's going on there? So now we see, you know, Mando confronts IG-11. We see that at least two bounty hunters were assigned to this job, but they didn't know about each other. You know, often part of the guild is you can split bounties, but usually they know about each other ahead of time. And only one or one tracking fob goes out for each job. So if you're working together, you know you're working together. Usually there aren't multiple tracking fobs for a single job. So that's kind of a weird thing that's going on here.
Yeah, it's definitely out of the ordinary, and they kind of convey that pretty well.
And we just get a great firefight with Mando, IG-11, and all these mercenaries that are protecting the asset. IG-11's just a little quick on his self-destruct button. He tries to fire it off three times when they're, like, winning.
Yeah. Come on, dude. But, I mean, he was so dope. Like, I think everyone's seen the preview of him, like, reaching all around and basically just, yeah, it looked like equilibrium.
He's got, like, three or four different body sections, right? And each one can spin independently. So he's got these arms that just can spin around and point in different directions, and he's got blasters on his head. It's a dope droid.
It's super dope. And he takes out, like, 19 of them.
And so this is where I wish cursing existed in Star Wars, because they bring in this huge fucking cannon, the mercenaries do, and Mando comes out from behind this column that they're hiding behind for cover, and he just goes, okay, and gets back behind the cover. Like, it would have been so much more impactful to get an oh shit or an oh fuck right there than okay.
Yeah, I feel you. Just a shit would have been even better.
If he just pops out and goes, oh shit.
Yeah, that would have been great. Back.
Yeah, but no cursing in Star Wars. I get it. Whatever.
Disney.
And, you know, they take down everyone. They take over the cannon, take down all the mercenaries, and then they take the cannon and shoot down the door to where the asset is hiding. Yeah. That's a bad plan, man. You don't know what the asset is. You could kill it.
No shit. You don't know where it's at behind it.
I guess they're not worried about killing it because they could bring it in dead if they really wanted to.
Bring it in cold.
It's not until they meet him that Mando doesn't want to kill him. And that's when we meet him. The light of all of our lives. Baby fucking Yoda.
Dude, I wouldn't kill that baby. I mean...
Well, you know, I completely agree. Now that you know what it is, you definitely wouldn't want to kill it.
He's so cute. He's got all these great little expressions.
Yeah. Baby Yoda's fantastic.
He's fantastic.
I think he's the only thing that the entire world agrees on right now.
Yeah.
No, I haven't heard one hate for Baby Yoda.
You know, Vladimir Putin just isn't saying anything because he's trying to hate on him, but he can't. So he's just
it's weird. Star Wars fans, like, they hate everything, apparently. They hated Ewoks. They hate Jar Jar. They hate this and that and everything.
Everybody fucking hated Jar Jar. I don't know about you.
I like Jar Jar. I'm okay with him. But IG-11 was given orders to kill the asset.
Yeah, he levels not that blaster. Either or.
Yeah, not either or. So Mando, you know, he gets the drop on IG-11 and blasts him before IG-11 can blast Baby Yoda. And that's the end of it. We just get, he's kind of reaching out for Baby Yoda as Baby Yoda's reaching back up at him, and that's the end of the episode. Great credit sequence in all the episodes with these drawings of scenes from the episode. Always great.
Very good.
I really like this pilot episode. It gave you everything you needed in a pilot. It introduces us to the main characters. You set up the main dramatic tension, which is what's going on with Baby Yoda, right? And it left us with a ton of questions that it will hopefully answer throughout this season or throughout the series.
I mean, it started answering some, but it was something that, after watching this, it's like, that's what Star Wars is supposed to be, in my opinion. Like, Rogue One was close for a lot of it, but I think this was, like, pure Star Wars, in my opinion. Like, or what I loved about Star Wars the most, like, that old Western style movie, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's instead of this big giant CGI fest, you know, it's a lot of puppets and practical effects and shit like that.
Like, just gonna hate on the prequels like that right in front of me.
Now you listen here, you Lucas lover. No, it's something. The prequels are cool in their own right, but I really enjoy the practical effects. I think it's great.
Yeah, it's definitely a return to form in some cases, and it's got that Western vibe like A New Hope had, and just this someone searching for a journey, right? It's not about the destination. It's about the journey in The Mandalorian, it feels like. Yeah. I really thought after watching 6-7 episodes, I know this not to be true. Going into it, I was hoping it would kind of be this bounty of the week type thing of every week he's going after somebody different and we get into these kind of different scenarios of how he has to use his abilities. I like what it is, but I also kind of would have liked that.
It's like a bounty of the week, or almost a bounty, a half bounty of the week with overarching plot.
Once you get into it, there is something different happening every week. It's just not, he's not searching after a bounty every week. Like I thought, that's what I thought it was going to be of like, let's follow this guy, a day in the life of a bounty hunter and how it's different every day and how each job can bring its own challenges.
Mm-hmm.
But I like what it is and I like where we're going with Mando and Baby Yoda. After the pilot, though, we've got some lingering questions out there. Who is the client? Who does he work for? Right? Those are the big ones. What do they want with Baby Yoda? What does the doctor want with Baby Yoda? Still don't fully know what Beskar is and everything you can do with it. We need to find out more about how Mando got to this point. Where did he come from? How did he become, you know, go from that scared little kid to where he is now? Who were these people protecting Baby Yoda? And why were they protecting him, as we talked about? Was IG-11, was he hired by the client, or was he hired by somebody else since he had different orders? Why did they have different orders? Are there more bounty hunters out there looking for Baby Yoda? What is Mando going to do with Baby Yoda now that he seemingly didn't kill him? Will he take him back to the client? Will he just fuck off on his own? And most importantly, where does Baby Yoda come from? What is he?
Yeah, why is he central to this plot?
Because as far as we know, this species has only existed twice in canon. One, Yoda, who died at like 950 years old, and the other is Yaddle, which is a female version of Yoda who made like a brief appearance in episode 1 and then was never seen again.
She's
and
ugly.
She was part of the Jedi Council.
Yes.
She's
on the far left.
Yeah. But that those are the only two we've ever seen in the species. Lucas has been super discreet about Yoda's species. We don't really know anything about it. We don't know where they're native to. We don't know how long they're supposed to live. Are they naturally force sensitive? Anything like that. Is Yoda special in some way? Or, you know, is that how all of them are? So it's really interesting if we get that backstory here. If we actually get what is the species and what can they do and why are they so important or so powerful, that's a huge step in Star Wars lore.
Definitely. I mean, it has the potential to be controversial and important.
Everything has the potential to be controversial in Star Wars, though.
That is a great point, sir. That is a great point.
And more importantly, specifically to Baby Yoda, where does he come from? Is he just a member of this species? Is he somehow Yoda's offspring? Which, if he is, Yoda's a fucking liar and a hypocrite. Or is he, the prevailing theory is that he's actually a clone of Yoda, which would be, so 50 years before when this show takes place is actually the same time that Anakin would have been born. So about 10 years before The Phantom Menace. So, which would have been before we even see anything about the clone army or anything like that. So that means somebody was messing around. If he's a clone, somebody was messing around with clones, maybe practicing to build the clone army before they actually went and commissioned the clone army.
On Kamino.
On Kamino, right. So there's a lot of possibilities there of who or what Yoda is, or Baby Yoda is.
Yeah, I'm very curious.
I'm very curious, too. I only have one more episode to watch. And I can't wait. They're already filming season 2, which
good.
Is great. Give me more of this, because I'm there for it. I'm trying to get my wife to watch it. We tried to watch it together last night when I was doing my rewatch. She fell asleep 10 minutes in because she's been sick and she's tired.
Poor thing.
Or so she says.
My wife and I watch it together, and we were just kind of
And your wife
being
is
lazy.
Not a Star Wars person, right?
No, she fucking hates Star Wars. She thinks it's stupid as shit. But she loves Baby Yoda.
It is, as a show, it's kind of a Game of Thronesian type show where it transcends the normal fantasy genre. I think people outside of normal sci-fi fantasy fans can enjoy it.
I totally agree. I mean, it's cool. It's like an old school. It's a Western in space. Like,
right.
It's not hard to,
and it's,
to enjoy.
as Ben Wyatt said about Game of Thrones, it's human stories in a fantasy setting. It's human drama in a fantasy setting, which is what's important about Game of Thrones, and it's what The Mandalorian comes down to when you break it apart, right? The tension built up between The Mandalorian and Baby Yoda and the people surrounding the two of them, these are all things that the way they interact, it's all just human drama. Yeah, they're aliens and they look weird and things like that, but you understand where they're all coming from and what they're doing and why, or you hope to. That was the same thing about Game of Thrones early on, is everybody made decisions like real people would make decisions, or like the politics played out as real world politics would play out. Later in the seasons it didn't, but we're not going to get into that here.
That's why I told
my wife, I was like, I want you to watch this with me. I think you'll really enjoy it. And like I said, she made it in 10 minutes before she fell asleep because she's sick and had taken NyQuil. But
she
didn't have a chance, especially with how like slow and kind of drawn out this can be, with the just kind of pounding music and things like that. It's very easy show to fall asleep to if you're not prepared. But like, I was like, are you paying attention? Blah, blah, blah. She's like, well, I find it really hard because they're aliens. I'm like, well, just forget that, because the guy in the beginning is blue with weird fins, right? I was like, just forget that he's an alien. Listen to the conversation they're having. It doesn't matter that they're aliens. Because he's just talking about he needs to take a shit.
Yeah.
Like, that's a very – he's on the stranger ship and he needs to take a shit. That's a very human thing to happen.
Yeah, everyone's been at the you know, the friend you don't really know super well. You're not really comfortable shitting at their house.
Or like you're on a halfway long, like 2 to 3 hour road trip with this person, and it hits you and you're just like, look, man, I need you to pull over. Yeah, everybody's been there.
That's the better analogy. I like that. You're in the passenger seat and you're like, hey, yeah, dude, I know you want to get there, but I got a shit.
Yep. So if you haven't checked out The Mandalorian and you're listening to this, go check it out. It's great. If you have, let us know your thoughts on Twitter at APASomething, at @alone_podcast. Thank you for listening. Thank you for being a patron. And thanks for stopping by. The Bible says, man, without